Welcome to the Elevated Visibility Podcast, the podcast for female founders who are looking for more than just easy marketing tips and feel-good strategy and craving deep connection. I'm your host, Nina Gibson, holistic SEO expert and visibility enthusiast who is hell-bent on giving women a voice and a platform to use it. In this space, we chat all things SEO and marketing for your brand and business, but we also peel back the layers and the bullshit and dive deep into what it means to feel visible as business owners, women, moms, and more. If you're ready for holistic marketing strategy mixed in with some soulful storytelling, this podcast is for you. Welcome. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Elevated Visibility Podcast. I am your host, Nina Gibson. And today we are going to talk to the amazing Kristen Fisher, who is the founder of the gifting brand Boku. She is a retail strategy coach for makers and independent retailers and the host of the very amazing Product to Profit podcast. And we're going to flip the script a little bit about visibility. So on the podcast, we talk a lot about holistic SEO strategies and a little bit of paid ads and things like that. But we're going to flip it and come at your visibility strategy for product-based businesses, working on making your brand and products more attractive to retail buyers and wholesale. And we're going to talk all about that today. So welcome, Kristen, to the podcast.
Thank you. I am so excited. This is going to be a really fun conversation.
Yay, it's going to be so good. So why don't you start with telling us a little bit about you and your story and background and all of the amazingness that is Kristen Fisher and Boku.
Oh, all of the amazingness. Okay, well, I'll try and sum this up. I'll sum all my amazingness up for you.
I know it'll be hard, but for me, oh my gosh, beautiful.
For anybody that actually knows me, they would know I'm kidding, but I just feel like I need to clarify that. So yeah, so I have over 15 years of experience working as a buyer in corporate retail. So I've worked for a wide variety of brands, ranging from maternity brands to teen brands like an American Eagle to Urban Outfitters and everything in between. And I found that I was feeling a little bit burnt out in my career, but I love the retail industry. I love product. And so around the time that I had gotten married, a lot of my friends were getting married and having babies, going through big life events. And I was personally struggling with the gifting process myself from a financial perspective, it being super expensive, and also just from my own personal aesthetic and wanting things to look great. And so simultaneously with me feeling burnt out in my corporate world, or my corporate career, I should say, and wanting, like having this itch to do something else, I found that there was a gifting opportunity or gifting business opportunity happening in front of me. And this was before there were so many gift box brands out there. And that I think that industry has really grown since then. But I decided to just create a side project hobby, which was Boku. And just started out as a D2C site with gift boxes for single occasion gifting. And I was doing that on the side, just a couple hours a week. And then it turned into 10 hours a week, then 15 hours a week, then 20 hours a week, simultaneously with my corporate world. And then in 2020, obviously we all know what happened, but I had made the decision before we even knew. So like in January, my strategy to grow was, I want to focus on event gifting. Which is funny now, right? I had this whole strategy for in-person event gifting. That all blew up in my face. But what actually the blessing I think that came out of that year for me was that people needed that connection point when they couldn't physically be there together. So my actual website sales were growing as a result of that. And I pivoted pretty quickly and I started doing client gifting and employee gifting in place of in-person events. And so that year, my business really, I don't want to say blew up because that makes it sound enormous, but it blew up for me. And so I found myself working 50, 60 hours a week in my corporate job and a lot of hours, too many hours on my business, and I had to make the decision. So fast forward, 2021, went full-time in as an entrepreneur and focused on Boku. And I realized once I stepped away from corporate, I quickly realized that the reason that I was able to profitably scale my own business is because I took for granted all of the strategies that I had been developing over the years in my corporate life and was applying them to my own small business. And I realized that I took that for granted and didn't realize that not everybody had that skill set. So I started leaning into coaching and helping other small product-based business owners start implementing some of those strategies into their own business. And I also realized that I have this whole experience as a buyer that people are so curious about. People wonder what goes on in corporate. For some reason, it is so different than small retail. There's like this divide between small retail businesses and corporate retail businesses. And every corporate retail company does a lot of similar process things to drive profit in their business. And it's like, I don't know, what's the word? Being gatekept. It's held behind the gates and small retailers are trying to figure it out. So I now basically combine that experience and help product businesses figure out how to drive those strategies in their own business and figure out what buyers really want. And so I'm excited to talk about that with you today because there are so many cool things that we can talk about how SEO can play into that. So that's my story. And I would not call that a nutshell. That was like a very large nutshell.
Amazing. I loved, you did it beautifully. You did it very succinctly, telling us your background and story. And yes, so many of the things that we're going to be chatting about today can relate back to SEO and really your overall like holistic visibility strategy and how important it is for product-based businesses to be thinking about the broader picture. And before we started recording, we were chatting and Kristen mentioned taking an omni-channel approach. And that's really what this is and adding this additional component of it. So before we dive into making your business products more attractive to buyers, who are we speaking to? You know, if somebody's listening and they have a product-based business and they're like, is this conversation for me? Let's give a little bit of like context framework for the types of businesses the strategies that we're going to be talking about are really targeted to.
I mean, I think pretty simply, if you are a maker or you consider yourself, you know, a brand where you are developing the product and selling it wholesale, I think that that's specifically what we're going to be going into today. Although this strategy, if you are a product-based business, you can still listen in on it because even if you have a boutique or an e-com shop, some of these things might still apply to you if you want to think about your different channels and also the way you work with makers and brands. It might open your kind of mindset up a little bit to what they are going through on their end. But I think specifically, some of these strategies will be applied to you if you are selling product to buyers and you're trying to get your product into your dream retailer shelves or just expand the number of wholesale accounts that you have.
Beautiful. Okay, amazing. So let's just dive right in. So if you're working with somebody, let's say they're a coaching client of yours, what does make a business product attractive to buyers? What are they looking for? We see people, they're at like different markets and trade shows and things like that, but what are they thinking? Like what really makes a product stand out?
Great question, but it's also a loaded question because I think the very first thing to understand is that not every product is right for every store or every buyer. Just because you have this beautiful brand that you are obsessed with does not mean that every buyer that walks by is going to look at it and think that's my next bestseller, because every buyer goes into their assortment development stage with a specific intent in mind. So it's either the brand parameters that they have set for their brand, or it could be specific to the floor set and the actual concept and the floor set direction that the design team has set for them if they're a larger retailer. There's different things that fall into what a buyer is looking for that I think it's important to understand that your brand might not be right for every buyer. And so it's really important to identify your target buyers that you're looking for so that you're not wasting your time and you're not wasting their time and you're really focused in on who you're reaching out to. But I think across the boards, this day and age, everybody has to really have a brand that stands out and looks professionally put together. That doesn't mean you need to dump thousands of dollars into a branding package, but it does mean that you need to be really articulated with your brand voice and the way you want your brand to look. So your packaging needs to look professional. Like you cannot have it in a brown craft bag with a stamp on it. Like that doesn't fly anymore. Maybe if you're on Etsy where people are looking for small handmade products, that might be okay. But if you are looking to really level up your wholesale business, you need to have professional photography, well-edited photography. Your website needs to look crisp and clear, no blurry images. Like those things really do matter because buyers aren't just looking at you at your trade show, or they're not just looking at your line sheet, or they're not just looking at you unfair. They're looking at all the things and they want to make sure that your brand looks really cohesive and like a legitimate brand that they can trust. And I think that that's something important that if you're looking to level up your business, you need to have a close attention paid to those details.
Mm-hmm. 100%. You said something that I want to come back to in a minute, but I want to speak to this because this sort of ties into what we chatted about at the very beginning of the episode about how this ties back into SEO, and not just SEO, but your entire D2C strategy as well. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I both seen businesses where their wholesale is really strong, or maybe they've been really successful on Etsy and they try to translate that over to a Shopify site or something, and it falls flat because it's a whole different thing, right? When you're trying to sell on your website and gain the trust of people who have no knowledge of you, right? And same with like a buyer, they're looking for that standout product. And when a user hits your website and they've never interacted with you before, what are they going to be looking at? Your photography, right? How great are your product images? And does your site look legit? Do they think they're going to get scammed? Like all of those different things. And I think like that kind of gets underestimated sometimes because we hope and pray that we can piecemeal it together and it's going to work. But like you said, if you really want to level up, you have to take those things into consideration and really spend the time. I think photography is one of the big things that's really, really underestimated in how important it is.
Yeah. And I think too, it's important to know that does not mean that you can't infuse any of your story. Actually, you should 100% be infusing your story, but doing it in a up-leveled way, I'll use that word for it, because you still want to have your face present on the about page. You still want to tell people about you and your process and what makes your brand stand out, because chances are there are a million other people with the same type of product as you. Mm-hmm. Like we'll just call a spade a spade. You can have your creative spin on it, but there's only so many types of candles that you can make to make yourself stand out. So you need to tell your story and infuse your story in that. And buyers are really looking for that, you know, marketing handle. They want to feel good about who they're buying from. So you can still do that, but you just don't want it to look, I don't know what the word is. I'm going to say the only word that comes to mind is janky. Like you don't want it to look janky. You can shoot some things on your iPhone and have it feel like this fun behind the scenes moment, but you also mm-hmm. want a really well done branded video that is actually a elevated video that somebody who understands video or videography is doing for you. Or at minimum, you just have really great product shots that don't look like you took them on your iPhone. You still can take them from your iPhone, but you have to understand how to edit so that it looks like they are professionally done.
That's such great advice. I think for thinking about photography and not thinking like you need to go spend thousands of dollars on a photographer, but knowing how to utilize what you have in a way that really makes things look professional, etc. And the part about the story, you know, I mean, obviously I'm in the SEO side of things and the more digital marketing, but something that I am reading and seeing a ton of chatter about in the industry space is how important not only the brand story is, but values, sustainability, mm-hmm. things like that. Consumers are becoming much more discerning when it comes to where they're spending their dollars. And so I have to assume that buyers are taking those types of things into consideration too, depending on who they're working for. So what are your thoughts on that in terms of really making your brand values and your company values front and center, your thoughts on sustainability as, you know, things like that?
Okay, well, hands down, yes, it's extremely important to buyers. I think no matter what size the business is that the buyer is buying for, so if they're buying for a small business, it's in the ethos. Like for me with Boku, when I go into Fair or Bulletin, I am filtering to women owned, minority owned, like all the things that are important to Boku, I filter to that. And I don't even look at brands that don't fall into that category because I don't want to be tempted by this beautiful packaging, because it's so important to me to be able to confidently say to my customers, the product that you are buying from directly impacts other women and minority owned brands. And we give back, and all of those things are important to me on a small scale. Whenever I was buying for Urban Outfitters, we would have collections that we would market to. And I think different values mean different things to different brands in terms of how they are bringing their product to life. That's more of what I was trying to get at. So even if you think about like, okay, I'll use J.Jill for example, was a whole focus on sustainable fabrics and ensuring that the indigo dye wasn't going back into the ocean. And we did, it was not even really marketed to a whole lot, but we as buyers put a lot of effort into developing the product that would go into that bucket for us. And the marketing team was like, why are we not talking about this? And it became a whole marketing message. And I think that was before 2020. And I think now it's even more at the forefront because of the boom on e-com that happened during that time. And all of a sudden, people that the older demographics even that didn't shop online suddenly were forced to figure it out. And all these new brands were also born and catering to the younger demographics. So all of a sudden, there's all these brands fighting for the market share. And so it's extremely important to say, this is what as a brand you care about. Doesn't mean you need to have a say on every political thing that happens, but if that's important to you, go ahead and say it. Target your ideal customer and client because they're out there. Don't be afraid to speak to your brand values, but also know that you might be isolating some people that don't care about that and just be okay with it. But I think it's important to stand out and have your brand values be very important to you. And I will just touch on the sustainability thing because I am very passionate about this, particularly having been in the apparel, specifically the apparel industry, and the waste that that causes and fast fashion and what's happened in the last 10, 15, 20 years with brands that are fast fashion focused, like a Zara, like an H&M, like a Forever 21, not to call people out, but I'm going to call them out. The amount of waste that goes into the landfills and even just how products are made, the chemicals and the things that go into these that go directly back into our water, it significantly impacts. And so I think I have such a passion, clearly you can probably hear me. I'm going on a tangent, but it's important.
I love it.
I think for consumers to do their research. And I think more and more, particularly the younger generations are focused on that. And that is becoming a part of the future. That is the way of the future. And so for me with Boku, I buy recycled materials. I know there is waste in my boxes because I'm gift wrapping everything. So I try and buy from gift wrap brands that are recycling my packaging materials. I try and buy recycled materials. There's only so much you can do, but I'm trying to do my part and I keep trying to get better at it. So, okay, I'll get off my soapbox.
No. I think that these are really important conversations, right? Because this is how e-commerce is changing.
Yeah.
This is how consumer mindset is shifting. And COVID absolutely played a big part in that. And I think just in general, they're more educated on what's happening, not only to the environment, but just in terms of the people who make our clothes. People are starting to align their dollars with companies that emulate their brand's values and personal beliefs. And I think that not being aware of that, I think is a misstep. So I love the passion. And I think that's so important to take into consideration because I think those brands who are like, I'm not going to step a foot in that arena, I think will be left behind because other brands that do take a stand maybe for same similar products are probably the ones that are going to get more visibility just because they're taking a stand on something they believe in.
So and they genuinely believe in it. It's not
and just, they genuinely, exactly.
It's not just like a marketing ploy. Oh, this one floor set, we're going to talk about the ocean and how much we care about the ocean. And then I don't give a shit about the ocean next quarter because that's not part of our collection. It has to always be important to you, whether it's the forefront or the undertone of your brand ethos. So don't fall for the trap of.
Yeah, no bullshit here. Yeah. You have to walk the walk, And I think that comes back to just authenticity in general. And regardless of whether or not you're a service provider or a product-based business, how important that is. And I'm not talking about, we could go down a whole tangent here, we won't, but not curated BS, fake authenticity, but the real deal authenticity. So my piece of advice would be don't, put a stake on the ground on things that you're only half-assed about. Mm-hmm. We all care about a lot of these topics, right? We all care about the environment and climate and, making sure that, modern day slavery is eliminated and all of these things. What are you willing to really put a stake in the ground and alter your own personal life and your business to really embrace that belief? So I think it's important.
I think a really good example of a brand that does this very well and very authentically is Primally Pure. They recently just came out with, I'll call it a campaign, but I think it's, I don't really want to call it that because that makes it sound like a marketing ploy. And I don't think that this is that, but they had made it very clear at the beginning of the year that they were leveling up their focus on being a sustainable brand. And they recently partnered with, I can't think of the name, of course, right now. I can't think of the name of the company that they're working with, but you can now send in your empty bottles, pay the shipping fee for them to be recycled properly, because so many skincare, you know, materials and things like that, even if they are clean, they need to be disposed of properly. So you can send in your empties and they will give you a discount or a coupon code to shop again with them. So they're like partnering with this recycling company that, of course, I can't think of the name of, but that is a really good example of, we don't want you to just ditch our empties, or we don't want them. You could put them in your own recycling bin, and chances are they're probably not being recycled properly and they're going into a landfill anyway, which is really sad to say. But they are, as a brand, saying, we want to make sure that we're helping the environment in every way possible. So I thought that was really cool. And that's a great example of how to do that in a really authentic way, but to also get your customers to come back and buy from you again, because we are also marketing. We all also need sales. So,
yeah, exactly. I love that. That's such a good example. Patagonia is another company on like a very grand scale that does the whole sustainable thing, I think, really well. Okay. So switching gears a little bit. So you mentioned something a little bit ago in the episode about, you know, making yourself attractive to the right kind of buyers. So if you're a business and you're like, okay, how do you go about figuring out who the right kind of buyer, you know, is, or are, you know, who these buyers are? How do you figure out, like, I want to align myself with this, this, and this brand? Obviously, you might be like, I really want to be in Whole Foods or Anthropologie or whatever, depending on your business. But how do you create like that dream list versus realistic, you know, list and figure out what actually really is a good fit for you?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. It's what's a good fit for you and who are you a good fit for? It's those two questions. So, I mean, just starting out by going back to the values, if there are certain things with your company that are very important to you as the maker, as the CEO of your brand, you want to align yourself with stores, with boutiques, with major retailers that believe in the same things, because you want to be able to confidently say, my products are being sold in stores that actually care about the things that I also care about. So that's a step one, like filtering process. But I think the next thing is to really look at the other brands that they are carrying. So you want to be able to go through, you know, your outreach strategy with the lens of, I want my product to sit with these other types of brands. And the buyer is going to then have that same viewpoint. They're going to say, okay, you make sense to come into our store, and you'll feel the same way. It's a two-way street. And so I think it's really important to understand that, because you might be obsessed with Anthropologie. That is your home. You would love to have your home look like an Anthropologie home store, but your product might actually be a better fit for, I don't know, I'm going to say a Target. And that's not a bad thing. That just might be a price point thing. What's another a better example? Okay, here, I'll go within the Urban Inc. brands. So there's Anthropologie and Urban are owned by Urban. So you might personally love an Anthropologie aesthetic, but your product is for a younger demographic and a little bit more edgy and makes more sense to be in Urban Outfitters. So you should use that delineation between the types of brands when you're building out your dream retailer list and your smaller retailer. Because guess what? As you grow, the bigger brands are going to want to know what stores you're in. And so if you're in this like random mix, I'm not saying you can't be in a lot of boutiques and a lot of e-com shops, but you do, as you grow, you want to start to be maybe a little bit more edited with who you're selling to, if you have the ability to edit. And those buyers are going to want to know what other stores you're in. And if you're in Targets, Anthropologie might not want you to be in their store because it might not make sense for them. Or if you're in Home Goods, they might not want you in. But if you're a little bit more selective with the different accounts that you have from a wholesale perspective, they might be more inclined to say, yes, you're an elevated brand that makes sense. Or yes, you are a quick purchase that would be an amazing add to cart for our, you know, collection that we're looking for, and it makes sense.
Such good advice. Okay, yeah. I've never really thought, obviously, because I'm not a product-based business, but thinking about how you go about identifying people that are aligned with you, in addition to just the values thing and the strategy of being like, okay, I'm going to be actually really strategic about this and not just like want to get in every place that you possibly can for the sake of it, and just, and having a strategy there. So that's really helpful to outline. So, okay, you are your product-based business, you've got your wholesale strategy, you've started getting into some of these stores and e-com, and now you're like, we're switching gears to D2C a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the relationship between the things that you're doing for your wholesale strategy, your D2C strategy, and your website in general.
Okay. I think one big mistake that I often see with my one-on-one clients is that they are so heavily focused on growing wholesale, and they will admittedly say, I don't really care about my D2C right now. I'm not really focused on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really big mistake, because your customers are so important. Your D2C customers, the ones that are coming back repeatedly, it's really important to nurture that, because first of all, buyers don't want to buy from a brand that no one wants to buy from or that no one knows of, right? Like, you want to have a really loyal customer base, because you're also helping the buyers, because the buyers want to bring brands in that people know about and care about and are mm-hmm. obsessed with, because that's going to bring more business to them if they're carrying your product. But also, let's just talk about the retail industry for a second and the landscape of sales, right? Mm-hmm. The economy goes up and down, up and down, up and down. We always know that it bounces back. But if you have a dip and your wholesale accounts are not buying from you, and you didn't really care about your D2C business, all of a sudden you don't have sales rolling in. So you do need to pay close attention to what's happening on your own website, because buyers are going to go and look there. A lot of times I will buy a product from a new brand that I found just to test it out myself first to see if I like it. I mean, whenever I worked in corporate retail, people would send me samples. Now it's like a little bit harder. I'm getting to the point where people are sending me samples now. But you know, when I was first getting my feet wet with my own business, I would make sure that I was buying the product and checking it out. And you want to see that experience. So it's important to nurture those customers and have a really solid customer base. So your website is super important. I'm curious, from your perspective, the wholesale site versus the D2C site, do you have any recommendations? I'm asking this because I always have clients talking to me about how to really stand out without just direct outreach to buyers. They are always asking, how can I grow traffic and get eyes on my business without the direct outreach? Are there any things that you would recommend for on your website having the wholesale piece versus the D2C side? I'm switching gears and flipping it back on you.
No, I love it. This is such a good question. I think that the things that you're doing for D2C and can work in tandem with wholesale, one of the things I'll say right out of the gate is, do not hide the fact that you offer wholesale. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I see businesses and they're like, you know, they use language that isn't like wholesale specific or things like that. If you look at the keyword research, we know these buyers are looking for specific things using language like wholesale. You know, they're not using other words. So I would just say, make sure you have a dedicated page where they can contact you that talks about your wholesale, all of that. And then the next piece of that is, you know, driving traffic to your e-com site is as much about your products as it is about the storytelling, values, all of those things. And you can do that through the legacy content strategy that, if you've listened to the podcast for any length of time, you've heard me championing about, but it really does play a big role in driving that ongoing organic traffic, and it compounds over time. So if you're thinking, and you would know this probably better, buyers might be poking around the internet. Maybe they're looking for specific ingredients in a certain product, or maybe they're just on their own time looking for things. And they happen to come across, you wrote a really amazing blog post on your website about said product, or where you're sourcing your products from, or about your sustainability journey, or whatever it is. And then that buyer finds it, you know, and same for the D2C person, somebody who's maybe looking for something and they stumble across your content because it relates back to not the product itself, but something that you stand for or something related back to your business. And they're like, oh my gosh, this person is writing this amazing article about their sustainability journey in their business. You strategically link to products in your blog post, right? In your article. And then next thing you know, they just spent $100 on your website. Same for the buyer. And that's, I think, a very underestimated component of your entire omnichannel, you know, wheel here, is that 53% of e-com traffic starts with an organic search. So we know that at least half of the people that are looking, that are somewhere in the funnel of e-com, are starting with organic. That might be changing, sure, maybe, but we still know it's an important part of the process. And even people who are finding products on TikTok, even we might keep that one in. Even people who are Even people who are finding products on TikTok, like TikTok has said in their own research, 64% of them are going off app to research that product.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're a buyer who's on TikTok and you're scrolling and you see something, or you're a consumer, you're still going. And so they might be typing your brand into it, like, you know, into the URL and going directly, or they're doing like blah, blah, blah brand reviews, right? That's mm-hmm. another thing we haven't even touched on, really, is, well, you said it earlier, but just making sure that you have that brand loyalty and people want to buy from you and that's visible, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you go to a site and there aren't any reviews, what are you going to think?
Well, yeah.
Right. So let's be honest, you know, and I think depending on the product, especially for higher AOV products, that's even more important, right?
Definitely.
So like, yeah, 100%. So I would say do not underestimate the ability to use long form legacy content on your website as a way to draw people in from both that wholesale side, but also that D2C side.
I think that's, it's genius. And if you really think about, you know, buyers, let's say it's a beauty buyer, that means that they are more than likely obsessed with beauty. And in their spare time, they are looking for new brands that they personally like. And the amount of research that buyers do, just particularly if they are buying from brands, the amount of research that we would do, or that I mean, I still do it, but the way I would do it for corporate was a little different than now. But constantly watching TV at night, scrolling on the iPad, looking for brands, looking for marketing handle. I'm working on a collection. I have a hole and I need to fill. I feel really light in body butters. And I'm specifically looking for body butters that fit with the rest of the collection. Like there's so many specific things and you never really know what they're looking for. So I think it's very cool to tie that into your content strategy and create content that is educational and links products. And it's like creating sticky content that like leads them down the web of, oh, I found this cool article and it took me to this product. And then when I clicked on that product, don't be afraid to say on that landing page, like, okay, have it set up so people can buy from you and buy that product. But also, are you interested in wholesale? Question mark, click here. And it directs you to their wholesale page. Don't be afraid to just be overt, because you never know where people are coming in and finding you from. They could find that one product from somebody else's blog, or they could come in from Pinterest and land on that product page and never even realize you have wholesale, then they bounce. So you want to make sure that you're creating all these like sticky touch points. So
exactly.
I love the legacy content strategy with that. I think it's genius.
Thank you. Yeah. I think sometimes e-commerce brands forget that they can educate and tell stories and create content in that long form way. You know, so much emphasis is placed on social media and things like that, which is super important, especially for e-com. But you can also use that to repurpose. And people want to get to know you, especially for smaller brands. They want to get to know you. And that's a really great way to do that outside of traditional social media channels.
Yeah. Because I mean, when I'm buying product for Boku, I feel like I'm literally spending my own money. I'm choosing to pay myself or to buy more product to make more sales. Like it really boils down to that, right? And I think a lot of people listening can probably resonate with that. So for me, I want every dollar to be spent with a brand that I know is going to drive sales and I've learned a little bit about them. And that doesn't mean I haven't made mistakes, obviously. We all make mistakes, or we all invest maybe not in the perfect ideal product, but the better you get at assorting and making decisions that align with your values, like that dollar really matters. You want to know who you're buying from. So
yeah, 100%. I know, we totally could. Okay, so this was so much amazing information. What do you have coming down the pipeline? How can people get into your world and work with you?
Well, I am constantly coming out with new offers. I mean, the coaching side of my business is, I am doing it because I love it and it is so much fun, and it's in conjunction with Boku. So I'm constantly doing masterclasses or coming out with new workshops and trainings. I have a group coaching program coming out in Q3 that's going to really help prepare for Q3, Q4 sales and just getting your strategy in place. So the best thing to do is to come find me on Instagram, come to my website, get on my email list so that you are like the first to know when things come out. So you can find me at The Product to Profit Coach on Instagram. You can also find me at Shop Boku, and everything links to one another. So you'll be able to find me there.
Amazing. And we'll include everything in the show notes. And Kristen has an amazing podcast too. So if you're a product-based business and you're like, oh, this is so good, I want more of this, Kristen has tons of episodes going more in depth about all of the topics that product-based businesses are interested in. So check her out there. We'll include it all in the show notes.
Oh, thank you so much. This is awesome.
Yeah, this was amazing. Thank you so much. I hope the sun is shining wherever you are. Until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Elevated Visibility Podcast. If you loved it and you want to support the podcast, please share it with others, your family, friends, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. I would appreciate it so, so much. Catch all the latest from me. You can follow me on Instagram at ninagibson.co. Until next time.